Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. And this is going to be a particularly rich intelligence briefing, I think, because we're going to be speaking with one of the preeminent investigative reporters of our time. He is Paul Sperry. These days, I'm pleased to say, he's associated with us at the counterjihad.com site, where he is the editor-in-chief. He is also a columnist for the New York Post, a longtime editorial and investigative reporter, as I say, with a number of books to his credit, including two that we're going to focus on in particular today. First, Infiltration: How Muslim Spies and Subversives Have Penetrated Washington. And the second, Muslim Mafia: Inside the Secret Underworld That's Conspiring to Islamize America. Paul Sperry, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. Good to have you back.
Hey, great to be visiting with you again, Frank.
Listen, there's so much to talk about. I hardly know where to begin, but I think I'd like to set the stage for much of what we'll be talking about in the course of this special hour-long edition of Secure Freedom Radio is the Saudis, the government of Saudi Arabia, the royals, the businesses, the charities, the Sharia-adherent Wahhabists and the like that are of late a bit in the news again, notably as a result of the release of these so-called 28, actually 29 pages from a congressional report done after 9/11. You've looked at this with your usual careful eye. Tell us a little bit about what was in those 29 pages and what we've learned from them.
Well, the biggest revelation, the biggest takeaway from those pages that, you know, a lot was leaked, as you know, Frank, a lot was leaked before these came out. Some of the information leaked accurately, some not. But, you know, some of this stuff is a little bit known, not really by the average American, but it's been leaked out in the Washington press a little bit. But the biggest takeaway that no one knew was the substantive links between top al-Qaeda leaders directly, indirectly to this former Saudi ambassador, Prince Bandar, who left the U.S. about 2005, but he was the ambassador in the run-up to the 9/11 attacks and thereafter. And Bandar, turns out, was almost on a speed dial with the number three al-Qaeda leader over in Afghanistan and Pakistan. What happened was the FBI tracked down some numbers that were found from this leader who was captured over there. Abu Zubaydah was his name, and he's now at Kidmo. But they found unlisted numbers for Bandar, and not only in his mansion, not only in the embassy in D.C., but for his private residence in Aspen, Colorado, which just is chilling. And there's new information that he gave money directly to some of these Saudi intelligence agents who were handling the hijackers as they came into the United States through California.
Now, when you say he, you're talking there about Prince Bandar, the Saudi ambassador to the United States for many years.
That's right. What was leaked from this report was that his wife had given money for medical reasons to another wife of one of the these intelligence agents in San Diego who were helping the hijackers. But as it turns out, there was tens of thousands of dollars going directly from Bandar's rigged bank account to the Saudi intelligence officers who were directly handling the hijackers. So that's new information. So really the biggest, the most shocking piece of information on the 28 pages is how it ties Bandar into the hijackers and the Al-Qaeda and the whole 9/11 plot. That is all new, and that should be investigated, because Bandar was never so much as a footnote in the 9/11 Commission report, which came out after the 28 pages were classified, censored, 2 years earlier, 2-3 years earlier, in the Congressional Inquiry Report. So there was no follow-up, it seems, on Bandar. From what I understand, he wasn't even questioned about this, and they never pursued those numbers. They this was so politically sensitive that the field office in Denver just handed it up and said, look, we know this is so radioactive, we're not going to even touch this anymore.
Paul Sperry, you have, of course, been studying these issues for decades and writing on them extensively and trying wherever possible to connect the proverbial dots. Let me just ask you pointedly the question that I think would be on the minds of most of people listening to you. Does what you've just described constitute really a smoking gun with respect to the involvement of certainly senior Saudi officials, apparently agents as well, in the attacks that killed nearly 3,000 Americans on 9/11 in 2001?
Well, the 28 pages, two things. One, 28 pages, there's no one single piece of information that in there that can be considered a smoking gun. But when you take all the data points together, there's so many of them in there. And by the way, this is my second point, that these are just summaries of the CIA and the FBI case file reports. This isn't the raw data. So it could be much worse than we're seeing in those 28 pages. That's a summation of the evidence. So, but when you take it all together, all the information is so reinforcing, and there's so much of it, and there's so many Saudi officials involved. And then you get to Bandar, and we've been told, oh, well, maybe these were some rogue elements within the Saudi government that were operating off on their own because, they had some type of affinity or sympathy for bin Laden or whatever. No, this went pretty high up. I mean, it's the highest level you can go in the United States for the Saudi government, the Saudi embassy. And then you had a Saudi consulate official, a guy named Thumairy, who was heading the Islamic Affairs Office out of Los Angeles, who was directly involved. So, no, this seemed to have been a conspiracy, at least inside the U.S., to help the hijackers. Whether or not we don't have a direct tie, at least not in the material that we're seeing now in the 28 pages. And keep in mind, too, that an aggregate of about three whole pages out of the 29 pages were redacted. Still, so we have a lot of stuff we still don't know, and a lot of that stuff, those blackout sections, whole paragraphs, and a lot of it around when we're talking about Bandar.
Yeah, and let's just recall that Bandar Bush was the nickname that was given to Prince Bandar by, I think, among others, the Bush family, which was very close to him and had been for quite some time. And Paul Sperry, one of the other names that appears in this 28, 29 pages is Turki Alfaisal. Now, you rightly point out that most of this dot connecting seems to involve the folks here in the United States. But Turki Alfaisal, who subsequently became the U.S. ambassador, the Saudi ambassador to the United States, but he was head of Saudi intelligence during this period, was he not?
Yes. Yeah, so you have Prince Turki, head of intel. And that was his portfolio for the ministry, for the Saudi government out of Riyadh. He is he was the brother-in-law at the time of Bandar, and Bandar's father, Prince Sultan, was the head of defense and aviation. And so then you go back to San Diego and you look at these two Saudi intelligence officers who are very key to the conspiracy there, at least with some of the hijackers who attacked the Pentagon, who came in through San Diego, and they were set up nicely, and they had a whole advance team for them through the Saudi consulate. Well, these guys were working for cutouts companies, shell companies, as their cover, as intelligence officers for the Saudi defense ministry and for aviation.
Yeah, it certainly sounds, Paul, we have to pause for just a second. We'll come right back. But it certainly sounds as though there were connections all the way back into Riyadh and the Saudi government itself, involving it, implicating it in this 9/11 attack, at least indirectly. Paul, we have to pause. We'll be right back with more with Paul Sperry of counterjihad.com right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.